This radio program is PG-13. Parents strongly caution some material may be inappropriate for children under the age of 13. Send me free. Jesus' mission was to comfort those who mourn, bind up the brokenhearted, proclaim liberty to captives, and open prison doors for those who are bound. For those who want more than status quo Christianity has to offer, Blazing Grace Radio begins now. And here is your host, Mike Janung.
Hey, Mike Janung here. Welcome back to Blazing Grace Radio. Thank you for joining us on this battlefield we call life these days, in this time of crazy and chaos and instability. And surveys show that more than 70% of first exposure to pornography for a child happens at home. So mom and dad, you need to clue in on this. And unfortunately, kids are getting smartphones as early as age 3. And by the time many of them are 5, 6, 7, 8, they've already figured out a lot more than mom and dad know when it comes to technology. And sometimes daddy could be looking at porn on the home computer or on his smartphone or whatever, or it can be an accident. It's not just always the parents. And sometimes we can be surfing around innocently and something will pop up. The enemy knows how to make that happen. And this is something to be aware of at home and to put safeguards in your computers and ask your kids from time to time, have you been exposed to anything pornographic? And talk to them early at age 8 about it. And so I ran across an article from the Times in England that takes this to another level, the wrong level. And the name of the article is called Why You Should Watch Sex Scenes with Your Children. And from the article, who can forget those excruciating childhood moments when an uninspected sex scene would pop up during family TV time and make you want to disappear? This is the mom writing this. I remember dying inside, and that was just watching Dynasty. That was back in the, I think, the 80s. It might surprise you to learn then that I have been deliberately subjecting my kids to that same content. With my 13-year-old daughter, I've been mixing up our sofa time with a bit of Bridgerton and White Lotus, both of which are rated 15. I don't know if the British ratings are different than the American. Both full and cringe potential and lusty bonking, so sex. And that was after a warm-up of films such as Dirty Dancing. Remember those silhouetted bodies gyrating, Titanic, the most famous car sex scene ever, and the AA-rated Blue Lagoon, all those underwater appendages on the loose. So this mom is openly publishing an article saying, I'm watching porn with my 13-year-old daughter, and there's a picture of the mom and the daughter in this article, and when I saw that, I just wanted to, like, barf, because already mom is setting that girl up and exposing her to lust. And lust is not benign. Lust has potent spiritual power behind it, the power to enslave people. It is sin. It is evil. It is wickedness. And this mom is blind in what she's doing, because the messages in those movies are that sex outside of marriage is good. And one survey showed that half of Christians, professing Christians, see no problem with sex outside of marriage. And this happens when we don't talk about sex in church, when we avoid this and stuff our heads in the ground like an ostrich. And so this is a part of what we do on this broadcast, to say, uh-uh, we cannot do this. This is the message the world is shoving down our throat. We can't do this anymore. This has to be out in the open on Sunday morning at church, and it has to be out in the open often, because these are the messages our teens are getting and our adults in bondage to this stuff, and there are youth, many youth in bondage to this stuff. So I'm going to read another quote from a lady named Brittany De La Mora. She is an ex-porn actress. She turned to Christ some years ago, and now she goes around the country speaking in various venues. And so this is what she posted. She says, "I was in the adult film industry for 7 years of my life. And when I left that life behind to follow Jesus, one of the most challenging things for me was getting rid of my provocative clothing. Dressing modestly meant letting go of the very thing I relied on for confidence for so many years, validation from men through showing off my body. When I chose obedience to God and began dressing modestly, I remember crying out to God one day and asking, 'Lord, am I ugly?' And he gently said, 'Why would you say that?' And I said, 'Because nobody affirms me anymore. Nobody tells me I'm beautiful.' And Jesus spoke to my heart and said, 'Oh, daughter, you don't realize I'm cleaning the inside of your cup. I don't want people to affirm you right now because I want you to discover your worth with or without their words. I want you to be so confident in me that if you never heard 'You're beautiful' again from anyone but me, it would still be more than enough because you know who you are in me.' And then she continues, 'I've learned that true confidence embraces modesty because it's vulnerable. It says, come, get to know my mind and my heart. Immodesty invites others to examine your body, capturing their eyes but never reaching your heart.' And then she writes, 'I've captured a lot of eyes in my life by dressing provocatively. But in the end, it meant nothing. It was when I began my journey with the Lord and he led me to modesty that I finally captured one man's heart, my husband's. I'm so grateful that the Lord healed and restored me so I could attract a man who didn't want just to give me his eyes. He wanted to give me his heart. If you're struggling with immodesty today, I challenge you to dive deep into prayer. Ask God why you rely so much on your body for validation. Dig deep. Examine your soul. Ask him to show you what you're truly longing for, because a man who will love you like Jesus won't just want your body, he'll want your heart, and he'll give you his in return." And a lot of things are going through my mind as I read this. For one, it's not uncommon to be in church and seeing women with low-cut tops or wearing stretch pants, yoga pants, or wearing clothing that what she would call immodest, that it's flaunting the body parts, showing way too much of the body parts. And I've talked about stretch pants and yoga pants before, how they're basically not much more than black pantyhose, and they show way too much of the cracks and the crevices, and they provoke lust. And it's not something a Christian woman should be wearing. But more than this, ladies, what do you really want? What are you really after? Are you looking to men to worship you like a goddess? First off, you're not a goddess. You're a broken person, just like the men are, with broken flesh. And it's stealing worship from the Lord on one side. And men are visually triggered. It doesn't take much to trigger that, but do you really want a man who's going to be just mauling you and raping you with his eyes? Or do you want a man who gets to know you and appreciates your heart? And sometimes we can miss that your heart is valuable and is precious to God, and your main identity is not the outward beauty comes through that, but who you are as a beloved daughter of the Lord. And this isn't just talk. This is real and alive. But the question is, have you really embraced that? And sometimes growing up, we can get mixed messages from parents, from peers, from others, and especially in school growing up, that my worth comes from how I dress or how I look or what I say. And heck no, it does not. If your worth is based on those things, then it's a house of cards that's going to crumble. No man or woman's worth can be based on their appearance or their mistakes or anything else along those lines. Your worth comes from your heart, which is a treasure from God. So we need to talk openly about these issues in church again. And Peter talks about, I'm not going to look it up, this is just coming to me off the cuff, about where he encourages women to dress in modesty, in modest apparel. and he talks about the beauty of a heart. And I know my wife's heart, and she knows mine. And there's a heart-to-heart there, both in the emotional relationship and in the physical relationship, that cannot compare with any other, and that's the way it's meant to be. And every once in a great while, it's not too often these days, I'll see a woman in public. She's in a dress. I'm not talking a mini dress. I'm talking like down to the ankles or below the knees or something like that. And I appreciate her. Not that I'm blessed in that or perving on her, but I appreciate her dignity, her sense of femininity, her sense of self, that she's confident in who she is as a woman, as a female. And we can do that. We can appreciate how others look. But in the end, sometimes I'll pray, God, help me to see that person through your eyes. Help me to see them not just from the outward appearance. Because, you know, what's going to happen one day is those looks are going to sag. That skin's going to sag. And if you are making the approval of whatever, the looks of men or women, and I've had looks from women in the past, I'm 62 years old, so I'm talking years past. But it doesn't touch my heart. That's just either the lust for other people or the lust to be worshipped by other people. So let's talk about prayer. And, you know, I talk about prayer quite a bit. And I've had Greg Reed on our show. He came out from the occult. And he knows a lot about that arena, that side of the aisle. And he writes a newsletter that I follow, and I just opened this literally up this morning, and he writes, did you know that the other side, the occult, has a 24-hour prayer book they distributed across the country through their networks that listed when to pray against pastors and their marriage and their children, and when to pray against and curse Christian ministries, and when to target believers to make them fail from the faith. 24-hour prayer book, but praying to the wrong, I'm not going to use the word deity. Satan is a fallen angel, very finite. Cannot be more than one place at one time. And when I read that, I wanted to throw up. And then Greg finishes it. He says, all this, and we struggle in the church to keep Wednesday prayer meetings alive, and we need to wake up. I talk about the spiritual battle a lot. We're in a time when we have gone from 8,000 projected witches 20 years ago to 1.5 million. We live in a time when a recent survey that George Barna did, that 25% of professing evangelical Christians said they worshipped another spirit other than God. We live in a time where 15% of professing evangelical Christians said they place curses on other people. So the occult is alive and well in the church. And they are sending people who are witches in the church. And the spiritual warfare is very real and very intense and very powerful. And a part of the game is to keep all of this under wraps, because we don't want to talk about horrors, demons in church. And that's why a couple weeks ago I did a show on the authority that every believer has in Christ to overcome in spiritual warfare. And it continues to blow me away when I meet with people, believers, and they know next to little to nothing about spiritual warfare, and they're getting their butts kicked. They don't understand that a lot of the thoughts that are running through their mind, thoughts of shame or doubt or fear or self-condemnation or even lust or hatred, are not coming from them. That the enemy is throwing those thoughts into their mind, and if they treat it like spiritual warfare and shut it down, then they will experience freedom. And more often than not, it won't take long. There are many times I'm going through a spiritual battle, I get hit, and immediately in the name of Jesus, I renounce whatever, fear, anxiety, lust, hatred, boom, it's gone. Sometimes those battles last longer, and I have to pray into it a bit more. We have to equip people in this arena of spiritual warfare. So, May 1st, we had the National Day of Prayer. That's a good thing, right? But you really didn't hear as much about it this year, at least from what I saw, as we did in previous years. And International Day of Prayer is a good thing. But when I saw that, I thought, that's nothing. We need a National Year of Prayer right now because we are in trouble. Our country is bankrupt financially and morally. The church, every single day, a pastor or a worship leader or somebody in leadership is exposed or arrested for an affair or child pornography or sexual abuse or something along those lines. So what I just read about the occult praying against pastors, that lines right up what Greg says. Every single day in the U.S., this is happening. And we don't realize that our most powerful weapon here is prayer. I'm going to read to you a couple quotes from Charles Spurgeon. And he says, "Do we engage with lukewarmness in private devotion, prayer? Is the fire of devotion burning dimly in our hearts? Do the chariot wheels drag heavily? If so, let us be alarmed by this sign of decay. Let us go weeping and ask for the spirit of grace and supplications. Let us set apart special seasons for extraordinary prayer. For this, if this fire should be smothered beneath the ashes of worldly conformity, it will dim the fire on the family altar and lessen our influence on the church and in the world." And that is what is happening. The world has been for decades flipping the script and having a far greater influence on the church. And you can see this when 70% of Christian men and 40% of Christian women are viewing porn. And churches are avoiding this. That's just one area. Another quote from Spurgeon: "If any of you should ask me for an epitome of the Christian life, I should say that is in one word, prayer. Live and die without prayer, and you will pray long enough when you get to hell." Do you ever think you will hear a statement like that in a modern, comfort-driven, soft church? He puts it out there that if a believer or a professing believer is prayerless, do you really have a connection and a relationship with God? In that the two sentences challenging you, saying, do not play games with God. Do not think that hanging out in church your hour and 15 minutes on Sunday and then letting the world choke you with everything else the rest of the week is going to work. A marriage isn't going to work like that, and the relationship with God, 10 times more. And Spurgeon's church, the Metropolitan Tabernacle in London back in the 1800s, they had prayer meetings going out throughout the week that were attended by hundreds. And that church and his sermons were powder kegs spiritually. And you can't talk as boldly like that, like he did, unless you have a lot of time and hours on your knees and prayer behind you. That kind of boldness comes from the Holy Spirit. Sometimes it can come from somebody who's a little bit arrogant in the flesh, just trying to read the right act. But in general, with that kind of authority and with that kind of power from the pulpit that doesn't pull punches, there's a lot of prayer behind it. Another quote from Spurgeon: "The condition of the church may very well accurately be gauged by its prayer meetings. If God be near a church, it must pray. And if he be not there, one of the first tokens of his absence will be slothfulness in prayer. No prayer meetings, no power, no spiritual power. I don't care how loud your worship band is. Today we associate volume and how loud the band is with spiritual power. Spiritual power comes in silence, in quiet, in resting with God, in going hard after him every single day in fervent prayer. James 1, Elijah was a man like us, and he fervently prayed, and it didn't rain for 3 years. We don't read of any special school of the prophets he went through. And he certainly didn't have a degree. And he didn't talk a lot about doctrine, but this guy had power behind him, the power that comes behind from Fervent Prayer. And how is your prayer life, really, today? When's the last time you've been to a prayer meeting? I can tell you that people I've talked to, the very few churches that even have the Wednesday prayer meeting left, what I'm told is just a handful show up. And that's why the American church has lost so much ground. And the other thing that made me want to throw up when I read Greg Reed's quote was, my gosh, the witches are putting out 24-hour prayer logs and prayer books and 24-hour, and we can't meet together once a week for an hour, hour and a half as a group or as a body, and we're missing out. We're commanded in Colossians 4, be devoted to prayer. Don't just talk about it. Don't do it. Just do a sermon about it. Don't do a two-minute in and out, God bless my day. That's just a light touch. And the relationship with God gets set on fire by hours in prayer. And he's taught me so much about prayer. And many mornings, this morning even, I went outside. It was around 5:45 a.m. And I sat for a while and just took in the environment here in the desert and the quiet and the birds chirping, and was thanking him and praising him and connected with him and struggling with some things to let go. They were kind of in my nervous system that I needed to pray my way through. But prayer is just an amazing gift. And so many people do not understand the amazing gift and the power they've been given as a believer. We are missing the boat. And the fact is, I don't think most churches or believers believe in the power of prayer, because if they did, you would be running prayer meetings 7 days a week. And if I was a pastor, that's exactly what I would be doing. I'd be running prayer meetings 7 days a week. And, you know, if you give me a church of 40 and 80 or even 100, but they're committed, all-out, fervent prayer warriors, man, we'll change the world. We'll encounter plenty of spiritual warfare, because the early church, which was devoted to prayer, they got attacked. I mean, they lost their homes. Some of them were persecuted. Some of them even lost their lives. That's how the Apostle Paul came into the scene. He was persecuting the church. When you become powerful spiritually, you get hit. And if you want to see what getting hit looks like, then stop by our Facebook page, where we get lots of comments like F you and cursing and people posting sick, evil, wicked images that I will not dignify with the description here. People saying things that have nothing to do with the post. It's just spiritual warfare and the enemy using his pawns to try and cause distraction or discouragement. So if you choose to become a prayer warrior, if you choose to start lighting up the prayer meetings, you can expect that. But that is where the life and the power is. I could not do what I'm doing without a prayer life that's committed. And that's what every believer has to have, a strong prayer life in these days. And it's not just about you, it's about intercession. So I have a list that I pray through every single morning of people I walk through, starting with my wife and then my adult kids. And I go through all of them every single day. Intercession is supposed to be a very valid and powerful part of every believer's life, period. So where are you? When is the last time you've been to a prayer meeting? We have, throughout the week by Zoom, we have prayer meetings for people that are attended from the U.S., U.K., and other places. Doesn't cost you a penny to join. You can join this week, next week. I want to challenge you to make prayer a big priority in your life. It is so necessary right now. So thank you for joining us. Thank you for being a part of what we do. And I'll see you next time. Do you want to be free?
Blazing Grace is a nonprofit international ministry for the sexually broken and the spouse. Please visit us at blazinggrace.org for information on Mike Janung's books, groups, counseling, or to have Mike speak at your organization. You can email us at email@blazinggrace.org or call our office in Chandler, Arizona at 719-888-5144. Again, visit us at blazinggrace.org. Email us at email@blazinggrace.org or call the office at 719-888-5144.
This program was sponsored by Blazing Grace Ministries.